bad financial data hurts you every single day in your business, because especially if you're using that data to make decisions, garbage in, garbage out, right? So if I'm trying to determine how I'm going to scale my business based on garbage data, I'm not going to scale my business properly.
What if you could redefine the grind of entrepreneurship into a journey of peace and profits? Welcome to Seek, Go, Create, where today's guest, Kendra Nicole, shares her revolutionary approach to business. As a fractional CFO, Kendra has transitioned from running her successful accounting firm to empowering entrepreneurs to build sustainable, scalable businesses without sacrificing their well-being. Balancing her roles as a CEO, wife, mother, Kendra embodies the principles she teaches, proving that it's possible to achieve financial success alongside personal fulfillment. Welcome to Seek, Go, Create.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I love being here.
I'm glad you're here too, Kendra Nicole. Welcome. Let's do this first before we start. If somebody bumps into you, you run into somebody, you're traveling, you're out with your child, something like that, and they say, "What do you do?" What do you tell people?
Yeah, I tell them I'm a little bit of a superhero, honestly. I'm a wife, I'm a mom, so it's toddler at that. I run a business called The Finance Femme, which is a virtual CFO and accounting firm. We exclusively support women on entrepreneur or women entrepreneurs and do all the things from bookkeeping, financial reporting, investor relations, fractional CFO work. And yeah, so I mean, I run that business my day-to-day, and I try to run the household a little bit as best as I can as well and do all the.
So superheroes, you mentioned that word, so I'm going to ask this question. Superheroes usually have some type of a superpower, and it's something that sort of defines them. What's weird is when these Marvel and DC universes, usually there was some kind of accident that occurred that brought out their superpower, but what are your superpowers?
I feel like I have grown over the years to have the ability to stay calm in chaos, which was not always the case. If there was a tornado going around me, I was going around in the tornado with it. But over the last few years, probably 3-4 years or so, which my son is 3.5, so yeah, I'll say about 3 years, I have learned to find calm in the chaos, which I do feel like is a superpower these days.
Probably not anything that you master, though. We have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old grandchildren. And we talked to our daughter, and we've parented, but we're beyond it. We're done with that. It seems like it's extremely tough in the world and culture we're in today. I don't know if it's different or whatever. I mean, it seems like there's always something going on, right?
Absolutely. And 4 and 2. So that means that your grandbabies came into the world around the time that Carter did, with pandemic and all of that was going on as well. And it's just different. Of course, Carter is my first child, so I don't know how it is having a child outside of a pandemic. But I do know that it's just been a really rough welcoming to motherhood when you can't have friends and family over to travel to see you. And so it was definitely hard. And yes, you're right. There's no mastering the calm in chaos. There's kind of just taking it day by day and trying to grasp onto it as much as you can. And sometimes it will slip through your fingers and you will be amongst the chaos. But it's as much as you can, I'm holding on to that calm and knowing that this too shall pass. Everything, this too shall pass.
Yeah, that's interesting. I forgot that our oldest granddaughter was born like February of 2020. So it sounds like you were shortly later that year. And it was real odd. We were in Colorado when she was born, and we were around there, and we weren't supposed to visit, but we did anyway. It's hard to not do that.
Yeah.
But I do believe, like, for her first 6 months or something, I don't know that she left. I mean, I don't know. They couldn't go to church. They couldn't go out anywhere. And I think we talked about it. What kind of impact is that going to have on that group of children that didn't get out? Yeah. But you know, she seems okay. Did you say what's his name? Carter? Wait, what's the name?
Carter.
Carter. How, I mean, adjusting, I mean, kids adjust well though, don't they?
Yeah. My dad always told me children are very resilient and I see it all the time. And this life has definitely put that to the test where I'm able to see it day in and day out that they're very resilient, because I was worried his first year of life, because to your point, yes, he was born in September 2020, but his first year of life, everyone's talking with a mask. So we're like, how is he going to learn how to speak in phonetics? And everyone's mouth is covered. And my dad is like, kids are resilient. Don't worry, he'll be fine. So yeah, I mean, from what I can tell, everything seems fine, but I do believe there's going to be a docu-series on new moms during the pandemic. Like, there has to be something that's going to come out at some point.
I think the kids are resilient. I'm not sure if the parents and the adults are. We're thinking about all these things. Yeah, I can kind of see it 20 years from now. It's like the COVID, the pandemic generation. They were born during that 12 to 24 months. How are they doing now? And I think they're going to be just fine. But that does bring up something that it seems as if you have narrowed down with how you work and who you work with, and that is female entrepreneurs, which are going through what you're talking about. And yeah. I do want to say this. There's some irony in a guy, first of all, an older, mature guy like me asking these questions. It's just different, though. And I mean, I think if we can't say it's different, then we're kind of fooling ourselves. Guys, men are going through different stuff than the women, female entrepreneurs, leaders that you're working with. So just kind of big picture, kind of talk about what are some of those challenges. We probably have already addressed some, but what are some of those that those leaders are dealing with, especially the female leaders that you interact with?
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. So when I started and wanted to really focus on women entrepreneurs, it was because I was coming out of corporate where I actually had a lot of male bosses and they were all excellent. I've loved every single boss that I had in corporate. But I would see some of the leaders, the company I was working for at the time, the CFO was actually a woman, and she was privately having these conversations with some of us, like female colleagues, about like how hard it was with her children. Her children were really young, and she would kind of give us these lessons on, you know, when you do have children, think about this and think about that, and kind of like coaching us a little bit. But it was like these side conversations. And so that kind of struck something in me that, okay, women, we need support. Like, we should be able to not just have these conversations with our colleagues, but have them openly and understand that, yes, there are things that we have to kind of deal with, even if the household is split 50-50, which can it ever be, but even if it's kind of well managed, there's still just things physically that you take on when you are either going through having children or emotionally, hormonally. So that's really why I wanted to focus in on supporting women when it came to kind of birthing their entrepreneurial journey as well.
Sure. And listen, I want to say I'm a man. I've been through all of that. My best bosses, leaders that I interacted with way back when I did corporate, they were all females. And I also want to say, let's take a short break from the show. Think about the leader you are today and the leader you want to become. Hello, I'm Tim Wenders, your guide to personal and professional transformation. In my executive coaching sessions, we dive deep into what it means to be a truly impactful leader. One who leads not just with skills, but with vision and faith. Through my coaching, leaders have redefined their approach, achieving not just success, but also purpose and joy in their work. Are you ready for this kind of transformation? Let's explore your potential together. Schedule your free discovery coaching call at timwenders.com/coaching. Your leadership journey is just beginning. Now back to Seek, Go, Create. That on the flip side of all the things you just mentioned, us men, we don't really know what to do. We couldn't handle all of those superpowers. We're just not equipped to do it. And I also want to say this, it's probably not fair. It is probably not a fair structure and system. My wife would probably chime in and say, yeah, it's not. But it is what it is. And you've been through, so you've had like transitions and shifts in your career. And are you originally from the South? Clemson University. Where are you originally from before you went to Clemson?
I lived in South Carolina for a little while. So I went to high school in South Carolina and fell in love with Clemson. And so that's why I ended up going there for school. But definitely have had several transitions. I would say the largest was obviously just going into corporate, right? Like real life, going from college to corporate and then climbing that corporate ladder. My goal was always to stay in corporate. I knew nothing about entrepreneurship. Like I do not have an entrepreneurship family. I'm definitely a corporate climbing family. So when I started into entrepreneurship, that transition was very new and very different for me. And that was probably the biggest one, like the first one that I kind of took.
So what was, when you entered that corporate world, and we're going to tie some of this together as it leads into what you're doing now, but when you entered that corporate world, you mentioned climbing the ladder, but how did you define success? One of the things we do here is we talk a lot about success and how we define it and how it changes over time. But when coming out of college, going into corporate, what was your definition of success then, if you could recall?
Yeah. So my dad had a big part in that. He actually worked at Toyota for over 30 years and was like way up there, one of the high execs. And so I always saw that. And my mom was in accounting and she was climbing as well. And so I always saw that and was just like, okay, this is what I want to do, is like climb and just like become this top executive. And he was the first Black man to do this at Toyota. And I was like, I'm going to be the first Black woman to do this. And so I wanted that. That was success to me. And so because I also had, like I said, amazing bosses and leadership, it felt easy to do. So I was like, okay, yeah, great. This is what I'm going to do.
So here's what I noticed. I came out and I did corporate for a little while. I had already started a business though, and I'm probably 20 years ahead of you or before you, I guess. And one of the things that I realized as I was thinking about that corporate ladder was that paradigm of 30 years, be in one spot forever. It didn't seem to play out like that much. I'm not saying it's totally gone, but what point did you realize it may not be that what your dad had as success, which was 30 years, same spot, moving up, same company, pension plan, all that kind of stuff. Did you realize at some point, a little bit different?
Oh, absolutely. And my dad realized it too, because every 2 years I was changing company, not even just positions, but companies and sometimes state altogether. And so my dad, I remember when I left GE actually, which I was there probably like 4 years. So he really thought that was going to be like, he was like, oh, GE's going to be here. I know he thought that. And so when I left there, not only did I leave the company, but I left the state. And he was just like, what are you doing? You're moving again. You're changing again. Like, what are you doing? So I knew in that moment, it wasn't about entrepreneurship. I just knew that I wasn't going to be the 30-year lifer to one company. And I was all about, hey, Dad, every time I move and change positions, I learn something vastly different that I couldn't learn if I just stayed in the same company. And I very clearly still remember that conversation.
Did you hesitate to communicate with him when you were about to make a move? The reason I bring it up, this has been years ago. My mother, I was at Bell South, a large corporation, for about 9 years, and I had 10 jobs over the course of those 9 years, moved around, bounced around, mostly the Atlanta area because they were based there. And I remember my mom, which probably was my dad saying something similar, was, can't you find anything that you can do, or can't you settle in? And the answer was no, not really, because of it just wasn't that environment anymore. And I'll say it this way, was there a sense of, I don't like using the word failure, so we might could try to use another word, but was there ever a sense of failure because it wasn't that model that you knew from your family?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say it was, and I agree that failure might not be the right word, but that it was just kind of like, maybe like disappointment, where maybe I felt like I was kind of disappointing my dad because I'm not exactly doing it the way that he did. Meanwhile, my mom is like, go for it, whatever it makes me happy. So I always had that balance, which is great. But yeah, I definitely feel like there was a sense of disappointing him by not going in that exact
Right. Good. All right. So you moved around a good bit and had some corporate experience. Give me, and maybe this is high level, low level, whatever. Give me maybe the best thing or the top thing that you learned during that time. And then maybe something that wasn't as positive that you kind of have taken from those years, Kendra, the early years or whatever we want to call it.
Yeah. So while I was in corporate, for sure, one of the big things that I learned was the relationships. So the, like I said, the CFO and how she would kind of bring some of this, us women like under her wing. And then even the relationship between the CFO and the CEO, that's kind of how my love for this whole fractional CFO and creating this fractional CFO, basically that's how that came about, because I saw the relationship between the CEO and CFO and how they would not move forward in the business without coming together in the boardroom and talking over the numbers and all the things. So relationships is something that was a large part of my learnings in corporate. And I would say on the opposite end of that, it might be, honestly, maybe something similar in that if you're not making those great relationships, sometimes it's not about how great you are and how great of the work that you can do, but it's maybe about your lack of relationship. And so it's kind of one of those, I guess, double-edged swords where it could be great and amazing if you had the relationship and it was built the way that whoever thinks that it should be built. But if you don't have it, you might miss out on certain opportunities.
I think I heard someone say one time that they were talking about business or something. They said, yeah, the best thing about what we do, they're the people. And then they said, the worst thing about what we do are the people. And I do see that. Now, as you transitioned, when you left corporate, did you start your own thing immediately? Did you decide you were leaving? Was it a side hustle? What was that transition like, moving away from that corporate experience?
So entrepreneurship literally fell in my lap. And I know it's like cliche when folks say that. It truly did. I was climbing this ladder. I had the goal to get the floor to ceiling glass windows, corner office. Like that was my goal. But I had friends who were starting businesses and who were doing great in their business. I mean, they were making millions of dollars in sales in their business each year. And so I'm thinking, when they're on social media, like about all their sales and everything. And I'm like, oh, they're just living the life. But then behind closed doors, they'll come to me and they'll say, I'm struggling. Like these numbers aren't making sense. Can you help me? And so I'm like, sure, put me in touch with your accountant. And they don't have an accountant. They're like, I don't have an accountant. What are you talking about? And so I'm like, how are you making millions in your business if you don't have an accountant, a bookkeeper, anything? And so that's when I started to work with them on the side, not thinking at all this would be a business, just thinking I'm helping out a few friends. But those first couple of friends, after a few months in their business completely turning around just because they had visibility into what they were doing. And of course, as an entrepreneur, if your business is doing well, then like your life is doing well. Like it's a personal thing. And so when I saw that turnaround for them after just a few months of working together, it clicked instantly that like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So like corporate was like paid training to be able to help these women in real life with their small business make changes in their business. And so once I saw that, I was like, GE is going to make billions of dollars whether I show up to work or not. But these women might close the doors if we don't show up for them. So that's how the transition happened. And I would say after about 5 or 6 months of kind of side hustling it with friends on the side is when I left corporate and started full time.
And so one of the things that comes up when we talk about business owners, let me address this before I move farther. It's amazing how sometimes social media doesn't portray the whole story. You said, oh, they're killing it. They're doing so great. And yeah, they might have that revenue come in, but there's the behind the curtain. Wouldn't it be great if we actually had a true reading or gauge of what's going on? So you kind of get to look under the hood a good bit. Yes. With people, which is pretty powerful. And you could probably find out what's really going on. Before we get into some of those details, though, I'm always fascinated when I talk to people that deal with money. And there's a couple things I want to talk about here before we kind of go into all the services you provide and what you're doing and some things we could learn from the people that you're working with. And that is, What has been, over the course of your life, what has been your relationship with money? And what has been some of the things you've learned from seeing how other people, especially business people and owners, deal with money? So first of all, talk about money. Is it something that drives you? Is it something you've always thought about? You've always been good at dealing with it? Or anything you want to share about money, air quotes, for those that are listening in here?
Yeah. So I love this question now. When I used to hear this question or something similar, I would get anxiety because I actually have always had a pretty good relationship with money. My dad has, when he was climbing that ladder, he'd pay for our college. Like he bought our first cars for us, for me and my siblings. Like, so I've always had a good relationship with money. And so when I first started, I used to always think, man, no one's going to really want to work with me because they're going to think, this girl comes for money. Like, she has to understand me and my struggles in my business. She comes for money. Not realizing that just because I had the ability to get money from my family didn't mean that I did. I struggled like every other entrepreneur struggles. I struggled in college, like every other college kid struggled. But I say that because when I would first hear that question before, I would always think, okay, man, everyone's always got the rags to riches story. And I don't have this rags to riches story. So anyways, that's my true relationship with money is it was never I have to accumulate so much of this but just like it was never I don't have enough of it. There was never really any deep thought around money, except for I know that it can make people happy. For example, I always think of this story when my dad would take like our whole family, like cousins and aunts and uncles out to eat. And he'd always pick up the tab for the whole table. And I would just always see how no one ever had to worry about like who's going to pick up the tab, right? Things like that. That's my thought when it comes to money is being able to do that. And so hopefully that answers your question, but that's kind of what my relationship was with money. And even now to this day, it's always when I'm talking to like my business owners that I'm working with, I'm always trying to understand what their relationship is with money, where some of these almost like arbitrary goals come from, because you always hear I want $1 billion of sales this year, or I want 500K in my savings account. What are these numbers tied to? So I always try to get a better understanding of that from them as well.
The reason this is kind of a neat conversation, I didn't realize it when we were scheduling this interview, but the last interview I did was with Stephen DeSilva that it probably will release right before this episode for those that might want to search. We actually discussed prosperity and money from the spiritual tone. And I think that's a great foundation for a lot of people. And then I think next week, the next one we're having is talking to someone who's kind of like a wealth advisor. And so I'm looking at our conversation here as like a business owner, how to deal with like some practical and things like that. So I think this arc is going to be a great combination. But I do think that we learn a lot about people in two situations. When they have a lack or extreme lack of financial resources, yeah. And possibly when they have an abundance or an extreme abundance, yes, of financial resources. Would you agree with that? And is there anything you want to say about that?
100%. I totally agree with that. I think sometimes on the abundant side, what can show up is the insecurities that people might have. And sometimes that money is, or that what we think is abundance or excess of money is used to kind of fix or resolve or gloss over some of those insecurities. And so I definitely agree 100% that you can really see someone on both of those ends of the spectrum for sure.
Yeah. And I think what that does is it can really manifest when someone has a great idea, they have a business, they're trying to provide a service, and then all of a sudden they're doing all those business things and we're dealing with either a lot of money coming in or things are tight and things like that. Yeah. So with that, let's transition and let's talk about some of the things that you've seen, maybe high level, and then we'll go down practical with that mindset about money. Maybe let's start with mindset. You've interacted with a lot of, females, it sounds like, and I know you don't want to mention names or anything here, but what are some ways that you've seen people handle the mindset of money well, and maybe some examples when people, it's like, okay, this is something that we're going to have to exercise these demons to get this to where we could really be do well financially. And I'll mention a couple things after you say that, but anything pop to mind when I bring that up?
Yeah, I would say some of the biggest like struggles or hurdles will come through when one is extremely creative and maybe coming up with several different ideas and or concepts, and everything has to go live now. I have to launch everything today. And then I come up with a new idea in a week and I want to launch that one too. And sometimes that's just because they're super creative, but sometimes it's also out of fear that what I launched last week might not bring in enough money, so let me create something else. And so they have 100 things that are 85% complete, but nothing that's 100% across the finish line. And so they're tapped out emotionally, physically, financially, because they can't get anything to the finish line because they keep starting these new things. And so I do see that often with those that are just extremely creative and come up with these different concepts and ideas. And I think that sometimes that does come out of fear of, well, these other things that I created might not be enough or might not bring in what I need to let me create something else. That's definitely one that I see. Another one is with the social media side of seeing the success of everyone else and thinking that they don't have that success. And so they're chasing that. And chasing someone else's success is extremely expensive on all of your resources, on your money, on your energy, on your time. You can't chase someone else's success. You don't know what their success actually is. So it's just this like never ending thing that you're kind of running after. And I see that often as well. And I get it. It's hard, but I do see that quite a bit as well.
Yeah, the comparison trap is so challenging. And I would say years ago when I was starting my first businesses, you could just look around and see two or three people. Now you can look around and see 200 or 300 or 200 or 3,000. And boy, they look like they're just killing it and doing so great and living their best life. And that's why I like talking to people that are in the CFO role, because they sometimes know really, like I said earlier, what's under the hood. Do you ever run across entrepreneurs, business owners? I know that I deal with this, and I deal with mostly males. I'm not exclusive, but that they're just delusional. They just have no clue or concept. Don't mention names here if it's true. But they're probably good at some of the things, but when it comes to the financial piece, they are living in dreamland. Do you see that often?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I won't say that I see it often. I do see it occasionally though, and it's hard because I feel like usually when I see it, it's because it's less of the lack of knowledge of financials, which is absolutely part of it. But it's more of they're just so incredibly passionate about whatever it is that they're trying to get to market. And it might be life-changing. It might change the lives of however many people sign up for that app or take that technology or do whatever it is. But it takes money to get there. It takes the marketing efforts to get there. It takes the investments to get there. And sometimes there's this, if you build it, they will come kind of mentality in entrepreneurship that like, I mean, I had it as well when I first started the business. Like, you get humbled very quickly in entrepreneurship. Like, that's just not how it works. And so I think sometimes there's a little bit of that where you just kind of have to let them see a little bit of it to understand, like, it can be an amazing idea, concept, whatever it is, but it takes more than that in order for it to be successful.
So one of the things I noticed with me that was, we were talking about superpowers earlier. I think it was one of my superpowers up to a point, but an overused superpower sometimes can be our kryptonite. It can draw down. What I had extreme optimism, and I really had a vision for the future of where we were headed and where we were going. The disconnect or the challenge was that it's hard to spend future money. I think people can borrow and things like that. That's not a good formula for people like me that have that mindset. And so I was living off future money, and I would say things like, oh, I'm investing in myself, or I'm putting money back in. We're investing back in. But I won't get into the whole story, but in 08, we had real estate companies, and that came to an end fairly quickly.
Yep.
How does someone who is a CFO or accountant or someone who's working with someone like that, how can you approach it to reel someone like that in without squelching all of that energy? That might be a hard question, but I'd love to know, because that's my background and probably a lot of listeners' backgrounds.
I find the best thing is to really understand each individual person and what drives them. Because you can be extremely optimistic and have these thoughts and these plans, and also be the type that if I were to bring you data of maybe historical things that have happened or data of projections of what might happen, you might be the type that could sit down and look at that, and that could actually be enough to kind of sway you one way or another if you're data driven. Or you might be one that can care less about the data. I have those clients as well. Kendra, I don't care what the numbers say. I feel this in all of my aura, and I'm like, okay, let's go about this another way. And so then I might tap into more of the, well, why are you wanting to do this? And if I can get a better understanding of what their why is and what their end goal is beyond this, then maybe there are other avenues that we can take that might be less risk or less of a financial a burden right now, that we can still get closer to that why without as big of a jump. And then sometimes it's just, you know what, you're right. Like, this might be a big vision, a big dream. It might be a big risk, but this actually all kind of shakes out and it looks good. Let's go for it, but let's check in often to make sure that it's going the way that we're thinking that it should go, and pivot when necessary versus like, let's just throw it out there and just like sit back and kind of let it cook.
Yeah. The thing that's the reason that's so good, Kendra, is the ability to access the data is where people like you, I think, bring extreme value to people like that. I've got a call later today with one of my clients, runs a company, and he generally knows in his head what's going on. He's a real detailed type person. But boy, he needs that, I think we call it a CFO in his organization, to track, look at trends, look at things that might be problems, look at what happened last year, what's happening this year, what might we do next year. And I think that becomes important. I noticed with your business that you use terms like fractional CFO. We talk about obviously accounting, and there's other words like comptroller and things like that. I think before we kind of go any further, could you, for myself and others, define what you mean by some of those roles? Because I think there's some people that would say CFO, oh, that's not for me. That's like a big corporate type thing. And that could be your corporate background, knowing the role they have. But talk about those, whatever you want to do, CFO, accountant, controller, bookkeeper, yeah. All of those, I think, are sometimes lumped all together. And I do think there's differences.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with kind of your bookkeeper. So so essentially what they are for. So a bookkeeper essentially is responsible for accurately classifying, from an accounting standpoint, every financial transaction that you make in your business. So every time you swipe your debit card to buy some supplies, or every time you get an invoice paid from a client, a bookkeeper's job is to ensure that that is being classified properly, so that when you run a financial statement like a profit and loss or a balance sheet or a cash flow statement, everything is on there accurately and in a compliant fashion, so that when you go to file your tax return and everything, it's all like on there properly. And an accountant is like the level above that. Your accountant also should understand some deeper laws for your business, for your location, that understands, okay, maybe there are some journal entries, which is a fancy way of saying some like adjustments that need to be made in your books to ensure that it's also compliant. So where the bookkeeper might kind of understand things at a transactional basis, your accountant kind of understands things at a higher business level. And then your CFO, well, let me pause there for a second. So that means that your bookkeeper and your accountant, they're all looking at historical transactions. They're looking at things that have happened in the past, the money that you've spent, the money that you've made. And a CFO is more forward-looking. So we come in, we have to have accurate accounting. So we need a bookkeeper and an accountant to do our jobs because they give us all of that historical data. But then we take that historical data and then anything else that's going on in the world and then understand, okay, well, if your business is currently here, how do we get it there? Or how do we get it here? Or how do we get it out of whatever mess you might feel like you're in? And CFO is more forward-looking. We create strategies, we create projections, things like that, where your bookkeeper and your accountant are more present day or in past historical. But we all work together in order to kind of create everything that's needed. But that's usually the step. And to your point about who really needs a CFO, you can earn $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month in your business and have a fractional CFO. Because we can just come in and maybe help you understand how you're making 20 now. And if you want that 20 to be 40, we can understand the metrics within your business that help you get to that 20. Because the 20 is just an end number, right? That's based off of maybe how many units you sold or whatever your pricing is. So we can understand the economics of the how you've gotten to that 20 to figure out how to make that 20 or 40. That's when the CFO would come in, a fractional CFO would come in.
So one of the excuses that many entrepreneur business owners will use when it comes to those services are something to the effect of, we can't afford blank accountant, bookkeeper, CFO yet. And you just mentioned a dollar amount, but could you now go through that, if you want to go through that list again, and kind of give, what are some clues that you need bookkeeper or accountant, or it's time for a CFO, it's time for fractional CFO. Are there any metrics around that? Or are there any, is there anything that someone listening or someone gauging it would say, okay, this is a trigger for this?
100%. So if you're making about $100,000 a year in sales, whether you're product-based, service-based, whatever, $100,000 a year in sales, which is about $8,000, a little over $8,000 a month in income, then you definitely want to at least consider a bookkeeper. Now, that's on the absolutely, like that's a trigger that should absolutely make you want to bring in a bookkeeper. But if you're bringing in $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and it's overwhelming to you, then you can consider bringing in a bookkeeper as well. Because there are some bookkeepers as low as a couple hundred dollars a month. There are some SaaS tools like Bench.co that I think it's like $140 a month maybe. And you don't have a person that you're kind of working with one-on-one, but it's a solution, a tool that kind of automates some of your bookkeeping. So if it's overwhelming, go ahead and outsource it. But if you don't feel like it's that overwhelming, but you're already at that 100K a year threshold, I would say still go ahead and consider investing in a bookkeeper. The accountant, that really comes in more so depending on the complexity of your business. So if you're purchasing a lot of like assets, whether it's real estate or whether it's a lot of equipment that you're purchasing, if you're doing like manufacturing, then you want to consider an accountant because they're going to look at some of those entries that we talked about earlier. And that would also be probably at that 100K or more range before you're obviously investing in like equipment. Now a CFO, I usually say if you're making about 250K a year or more, sometimes it's like 500K a year or more. It really just depends on what you're doing. Then you want to bring in a CFO. It's almost less about the dollar amount though and more about what's going on in your business. So CFOs are great when you're going through some kind of a transitional point in your business. Maybe you're hiring your first full-time employee outside of yourself, or maybe you are going from one location to two locations, or you're going from being a dot-com to opening up a brick and mortar location as well. So when there are some larger transitional points that are happening in your business, then you want to consider bringing on a fractional CFO, because it might even just be for that project. It might not be an ongoing commitment. It might be for the next 3 months, as I consider bringing on this next employee, I really need somebody that I can run this scenario through and help me go through these numbers.
Those are good gauges. I appreciate you giving us some indicators there. One of the things that also came to mind is, I think it was before I want to talk about the next thing, is how often, and you may not interact with these people. I think many times entrepreneurs and business owners, there's a statement that I make often, and it's called, "Thou shalt not fool thyself." I think we will often fool ourselves thinking, oh, it's just numbers. I can keep track of that. Oh, it's just marketing. I could do marketing. Oh, it's just social media posts. I could do that. We really do. This is goes back to the delusional thing. I think there's a delusion that we either can do it all or we have to do it all.
Right.
So how often do you have to deal with folks that are like, I know I could do it, but I feel like I just need help? Or I think women are probably better at admitting they can't do things. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But how often do you have to say, okay, let us handle this. You go do what it is you're really good at. I think sometimes entrepreneurs are not good at that. So talk about that some.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it's a thing with women as well, for sure. We'll often hear folks on calls say like, I know, I'm sure I could do this. I'm sure I can like create my own projection for this 3-year plan for the sales pitch or the investor pitch that I have coming up. But, you know, I would rather just outsource it. I'm like, okay, I'm sure you probably could do it, but wouldn't you want someone who does this for a living to do it? It's like, I probably could write a book in Portuguese using ChatGPT and Google, but what would I really want to write a book in Portuguese versus going to someone who can write in Portuguese? Yes, it does take, I think sometimes it just takes having the conversation with whoever that potential fractional CFO is for you to get comfortable with the idea of someone else taking it over. Because I do think, at least within finance and accounting, that a little bit of that is the concern of someone is about to kind of see all of my mess. And so they really are almost like talking themselves out of bringing somebody on because they don't want someone to see all of their mess. But usually that goes away very, very quickly once they have their first set of books done for them. And they're like, oh, this is great. I didn't have to do a thing. So it happens. I'm the same way with marketing. I'm always like, oh, I can do my own marketing. And then nothing gets done for like 6 months. So I get it. But usually once they hand the reins over, it's very easy for them to then see like, oh, I should have done this a long time ago.
Yeah. Or you get it done and it's done poorly. And there's some pretty, I don't want to say severe repercussions. There's some repercussions if you don't handle the financial pieces right. I've interacted with clients in the past that have brought up things that sound something like this. I'll mention this and then let you respond. Something like this. Oh, we've paid our taxes, but we haven't done a return in 3 or 4 years, which is an interesting. Or, yeah, we've been a little bit tight. We're a little bit behind on our tax situation, and we'll get caught up as soon as blank happens. When you hear things like that, as someone who deals with the financial piece, what goes through your mind?
It's tough because you don't want to like ring the alarms, but at the same time, you have to kind of wake them up a little bit to the realities of what's going on. And then also, like, yes, there's the repercussions with taxes for sure, which is definitely something that you don't want to mess with. But then also bad financial data hurts you every single day in your business, because especially if you're using that data to make decisions, garbage in, garbage out, right? So if I'm trying to determine how I'm going to scale my business based on garbage data, I'm not going to scale my business properly. It's going to go any old kind of way. I always let folks know that bad financial data, like, this is beyond the scary tax man, which is a scary tax man, by the way, it really is. But beyond the tax man, it's your day-to-day decision-making that's also on the line. So why grow a business with this incomplete data when you can have information in front of you that helps you make everyday decisions, the decisions that we all have to make? Is my pricing right? How much should I offer this person for this full-time job? Like, these are questions that we have to make that looking at data would help us make.
I think it's just being a good steward of what you've been gifted with. It's something we talk about a good bit here. I think that's the right thing spiritually. I think it's just the right thing. If you've got a business, you need to steward it and take care of it in a certain way. And part of that are the numbers. Part of that is the people. Part of it's other assets and other things that you've been gifted with. And so I think it's something that you just need to take care of better. And it seems like that's what you bring into the business. You've got something that I read about called Peace and Profits. And in the same sentence that I was reading it, it said something about stop the hustle or stop the hustle and grind, which is near and dear to my heart. I was the early part of my life up until probably 20 minutes ago. I would have been kind of a hustle and grind type person. No, actually about 15 years ago is when I started getting purged of that. And so anytime I see something, it might've been what attracted me for us to have this conversation, peace and profits and avoid the hustle. It means something to me. So tell me about peace and profits and how those fit together.
Yeah, as a CFO and someone who's in finance, it was always about profit to me because that's just kind of what made sense. I'm here to look at the data and the numbers to see what's going to be the most profitable thing. And even when I started my business, same concept, because I took that mentality from corporate. And then 2020, I had my son. And when I had my son, I thought that I had set myself up to have this like great maternity leave as an entrepreneur. I'm like, I'm in control of my own time. I can like determine who I could talk to and all of this, how many hours I work. And that just wasn't the case. I was still grinding while bouncing on a yoga ball, while like nursing my son to sleep so that I could take a call and hoping that he doesn't wake up. Like, and it was that way for months. And I was so drained. And then it just clicked. And I had some clients who were completely understanding. And then I had someone in particular who roasted me on the call because I'm like rocking my son to sleep while I'm on the call with her. And that's when I realized like, okay, I really signed up for this entrepreneur thing because I knew that I could have a little bit more control over my life and who I work with and my time. And look, it's time that I really put that into place. And so that's when I started to transition my mindset from this business is all about helping people be profitable to this business is all about helping people be profitable, but so they can live a peaceful life, so they can do whatever it is that they're wanting to do, whether that's spend more time with their family, whether that's travel the world. It's a combination of the two things. And it then puts a purpose behind the profits, which ironically enough makes the profits grow because you're doing it for a reason and a reason that's in alignment with you. And yeah, that tipping point really changed things. And I still had my CFO hat on, but I always look at things through the lens of peace and profit. And once you start down that path, like there's no going back. I can never go back to being like profit, profit, profit. I can't go down that path anymore.
The interesting thing to tie back into something we talked about earlier, you mentioned that there are a lot of people that are chasing after profits, business, new business, whatever, chasing after a lifestyle that they think someone else is leading and they think they want to do that also. But you mentioned the chasing, and to me, that is almost the opposite of the wording of peace and profits and the anti-hustle. Do you still have people that come into your circle that they're going through this chasing? They're on the wheel. We could call it a hamster wheel. We could call it hustle and grind. All of these things. And I love what you just said. It's like when you stop chasing. It's like if your dog goes outside and you're trying to run them down, but yet if you just kind of sit with something that they come after, is that? I mean, have you had observations that you can share with someone listening right now? It's like, stop chasing, slow down, and let the business come to you. That almost sounds like a Yoda type statement and all that. But I don't even know if that question made sense, but what do you want to say to anything about it? Stop chasing, allow the peace and profits to come to you.
Yes, and you're 100%. Like I always say like, I am not a woo-woo person. My sister is so woo-woo, right? And I'm like, oh, you are just so woo-woo. I'm just not a woo-woo person. Until this shift with like peace and profits happened. And I'm like, okay, wait, there's something to this. There's a little woo in my life right now. And I'm accepting it because there's something to it. You can run and run and chase all you want to, and you will do it to exhaustion. But once you actually understand your why behind things, which again, before I would have said, oh, that's so woo, But once you really understand that, it grounds you in what you're doing. And absolutely, I mean, I definitely have clients who, once I kind of saw the light and kind of brought that to them as well, it just changed our dynamic and our working relationship. It changed how we implement and execute things in their business. And some folks, listen, some will come to me and will still want to chase and grind and work really hard when what they're doing. I understand that's the season that they're in and I can do the best that I can do to serve them. But yeah, it just, things just smooth out a lot more once you accept that there's two sides to this thing called entrepreneurship and it's not all about profits. Sure, you need profits to obviously continue to run in front of your business, but you need peace too. You need peace too. And yeah, I love it. I'm so very grateful for that client who roasted me on that call because I don't know, it would have taken me longer to get to this point. And yeah, I'm not going back.
Do you find that you're attracting people that fit? I mean, listen, when you use wording like peace versus scale, I mean, there's nothing wrong with scale. I'm an engineer by training and went to school down the road from Clemson at Georgia Tech. And so systems engineering and scaling, those were part of my vocabulary. But I'm in a place in life where that peace part is really important. Are you attracting clients that aren't roasting you as much on phone calls now?
Absolutely. 100%. And those who come in for like consults that I can feel just the highest strong energy that they're not on the peace and profit side and that they're still on this, like, I'm going to grind it out by any means necessary. I understand that's the season you're in, but we're probably not the best fit for you because I'm not going to move at that pace. I'm not going to tell you to drop any and everything that you do right now to accomplish X, Y, and Z with no thought about the other things that you want to accomplish in your life. And one of the questions that we actually ask on the consult call is like, what are you doing this for? Like, what's your reason for this business? And if it's just, I want $1 million in the bank account and I can't get any deeper than that, then we're probably not the best fit. But if it's like, I want $1 million in my bank account because that's the number that I hear is going to help me pay for my kids' tuition and I can retire when I'm whatever age and there's like something else behind it that we can like really tie into, then it's probably a better alignment.
Years ago when I was coaching in the real estate investing space, I would have some people that would say something to the effect of, well, I need to make sure that I've got your phone number to text you 24/7 in case there's ever an emergency. Uh-huh. And Kendra, my response was, this is real estate. There won't be an emergency. You don't need my text to text me. I mean, you send me an email. I respond within 24 hours. I'll get back to you. But that's not, there are no real estate emergencies. I don't know. Are there ever any accounting or CFO emergencies?
You know what? No. If it's at the end of the day, there's always going to be time to sit and think things through. Actually, ironically, earlier today, a client of mine sent me over a listing of a property that she's thinking about buying. And we've already had the conversation about if she should do real estate investing and things like that. So we've already kind of cleared that. But we had a cap. We had an amount that we were supposed to stick to. And this is far beyond that amount. And she's like, and I have to make an offer. They tell me I have to make an offer today. And I'm like, you don't have to make an offer today. Like, let's look over the numbers. Let's talk about it. But you don't have to make an offer today. And so I think it's a lot of that. Sometimes it's just kind of not talking our clients like off of a cliff, but just letting them being that other person they can talk to and understanding what they need in times and moments like that.
Take a deep breath. There are no emergencies. If that deal doesn't work, there's more. I don't like deadlines or pressure or stuff like that. Maybe that's just where I'm at. I haven't always been that way. We've got a few minutes left here. There's a few questions, and I want in just a moment you to list all of the things that you can provide someone. But I've got one maybe bigger question before I get to that, Kendra. I always love it when I talk to people that get to interact with a lot of different business owners or leaders. And the question that I want to ask when I find that is, what is a tip or a piece of advice that you can give, maybe financial related, it may just be bigger picture, things that you observe, and it might be something we've talked about, But what is something that you observe that is a tip that you want to share with the person listening in, that they're an owner, might be a female in business, might be male, I don't know, that you've seen from the seat that you have to be able to look at businesses and business owners?
Yeah, I would say, honestly, I would just say, look at your numbers. Like, look at your numbers. And if that just feels overwhelming, and if that just feels like, okay, that's just way too, like, grandiose, like, give me something specific, then think about some of the few, 2 to 5, we call them KPIs or metrics, but essentially numbers that are the most important and impactful to your business. So if you are a product-based business, that might be like your average order value, like your cart rate, right? Or it might be how many sales orders do you do in any given month? Or if you are a consultant, it might be how many prospects do you have in the pipeline? What's your close rate when you're on sales calls? But focus in on just a few of those key numbers that matter in your business and track them and look at them. And as you track them and look at them over time, you'll start to see like trends and seasonality, things that might impact those numbers. Just get really comfortable and familiar with those few numbers. You don't have to know the whole P&L and balance sheet like the back of your hand, but know those few numbers, because with the clarity comes the confidence. And confidence is really what you need in entrepreneurship, when to not get tested if someone's testing you on your prices or on whatever it is. If you have that data on those few key things, then that gives you a lot of clarity and a lot of confidence. And so I really just think, just know what those few numbers are and make sure that you study them.
Yeah, that's really good. I think clarity is so much better than confusion and not knowing those numbers. So I was looking at your site and looking at the information, and I do believe, and we went over some of the terms of fractional CFO and all earlier, but if you could right now, tell us what all you can provide for someone, especially a female business owner or entrepreneur that might be listening in. What all do you and your company provide for people?
Yep. So we have 3 main services. So we have our executive accounting solution, and that is for anyone who needs that bookkeeper or that accountant. That's anyone who needs that clarity in their financials. We come in, we take over your accounting, we do all your financial reporting for you every month. And so that is where you are completely hands-off on having to like maintain your day-to-day books and financial reports and all of that. That's our executive accounting solution. And then our fractional CFO solution is for anyone who is kind of on that next phase in their business. So like I said, maybe they're going through something transitional, bringing on their first hire or scaling their team, their product suite, and they need more strategy. So we'll still handle your accounting and all your financial reporting, but then I'll come in and we'll have these really strategic conversations. We'll build out a plan around whatever it is that you're kind of transitioning into. And we're marching to that strategy and kind of and pivoting. I always say that, because we got to pivot, right? All the time as entrepreneurs, things change and move, but pivoting along the way. That's the fractional CFO service. And then taxes as well. We handle all things taxes, whether it's just preparing and filing or tax strategy as well.
Very good. And if someone wants to connect with you, one of the toughest things we had when we first got on the phone was, what do I call you? You're Kendra Nicole or Kendra Nicole James Anderson, Kendra Nicole James. But if someone wants to connect with you or to find this, where do they need to go? We'll include it in the notes, but where do they need to go?
Yeah. So the best place really is thefinancefemme.com. And FEMME is FEMME. But thefinancefemme.com is really the best place to go to get more information on those services and to be able to reach out. My email is info@thefinancefemme.com. And so that's probably the best way to get in touch.
It's always tough. This is another thing that we started the conversation with, how sometimes things just aren't fair. Our culture, women change their names and men don't. Some are doing it now. Some are adding hyphens and stuff like that. They typically don't. And it's got to make it tough for someone who's gone through corporate and then, get married and then all of that. Is that kind of where all these names come from? Or do you have like multiple superpowers that you...
Each superpower has an identity. Yeah, I wish. When I got married, for sure, adding one Anderson. But then LinkedIn and everyone in my corporate was still doing me from Kendra Nicole James. And then I was like, well, my podcast is Kendra Nicole. So it was just... Yes, I appreciate working with me on all of these name variations.
Yeah, and we even came to the agreement, I'm going to call you Kendra Nicole, okay? I'm going to call you Kendra Nicole. So anyway, Kendra, we are seek, go create those three words. I'm going to allow you as my last question to choose one of those that just resonates more with you and means more to you and why. My final question, seek, go, or create?
I'm going to go with seek. I'm going to go with seek. And I hope that listeners and that everyone really seeks what is important to them and understands like what their why is behind everything, especially in business. Because you put so much time, energy, money, effort, everything, all of your resources into building out a business. And if you don't really know what the underlying reason is for that thing, it's going to be very hard to push it through. So I would definitely ask, you know, to seek for what the underlying real reason and why is behind what you do, doing what you do.
Excellent. Love that word. Kendra, thanks for joining us here. And I just want to remind the listener, this conversation has been a great fit with what I believe, if it's released last week's Stephen DeSilva, where we talked about more the spiritual aspect of finances and money. And then next week, we're talking about wealth. So, man, this is great. If you haven't listened to those, go back and listen to those. We are Seek, Go Create. We release new episodes here every Monday. Your support means the world to us. You can now tip us, buy me a coffee, sip a whiskey, something like that. We have financial support, and you can go to seekgocreate.com/support. Go there. You can leave as little as a dollar or as much as you would like to. If you like what we're doing here, you can support us. Also leave some comments. So we appreciate you doing that. Until next time, thanks for joining us here. Until next time, continue being all that you were created to be.